This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not-so-nice things. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Lacey, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we'll talk about a plane crash that was no accident.
Then we'll discuss the creepy story of the Denver Spider-Man.
So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Centennial State.
Greed. The intense and selfish desire for something, especially wealth. We've all heard the saying, money is the root of all evil. It comes from Paul in the New Testament, and as far as they are concerned, greed is more of a threat to Christians than lust. Greed comes in at number 2 on the old 7 deadly sins list. Number 1 is pride. Number 3, lust. But even further back, before Jesus, the commandments, and faith, there was the original rope sandal wearers, the Greeks. King Midas in mythology was known for his foolishness and greed for gold. Even though he had a ton of it, he wanted more, and asked that everything he touched turn to gold. He was warned against this, but wanted it anyway. When he couldn't eat or drink anything, because everything, you guessed it, turned to gold, he finally understood what a mistake he had made. That's the thing about greed. Sometimes these short-sighted wishes for wealth have dire consequences, and you often realize it too late. Adoration of wealth is nothing new, and it's shocking to see what lengths some will go to for monetary gain, including murdering innocent people and their own mother to get it. At 6:52 p.m. on November 1st, 1955, United Airlines Flight 629 took off from Denver, Colorado, bound for Portland, Oregon. It was a DC-6B with 44 people on board. 11 minutes later, all 39 passengers, including 5 crew members, were dead when the airliner crashed into Longmont, Colorado. As the bodies were recovered, they were taken to a makeshift morgue in Greenlee County, where they were identified by friends, family, or personal effects. Mm. Well, say they were. Only 9 were identified that way.
Oh, gosh.
The 35 left were fingerprinted. 21 of those were identified from their fingerprints that were in the FBI database.
Wow.
So they had either been fingerprinted for different reasons, like one husband and wife had applied for naturalization papers from Canada.
Oh, okay. And so, I wouldn't have thought about that.
And so they were fingerprinted. Mm-hmm. So that was in the database. Crew members were obviously fingerprinted for the airline. 5 from the Air Force, Army, and Navy. 6 for employment in defense plants during World War II, 2 government employees, and 1 victim had requested to be fingerprinted and it kept by the FBI for identification if they ever needed it, which is weird. That sounds like something you would do.
No.
You uploaded your DNA just in case, so you would, that's where you.
I'm on GEDmatch, yes. But I don't, the fingerprint stuff, that's,
That doesn't make any sense. Why you would give your.
I trust GEDmatch. I don't trust the local.
You don't trust the FBI?
I don't trust the FBI. I'm Fox Mulder.
No. So 14 victims were not able to be identified by their prints. 2 men and 12 women all were ID'd later on by family members or something that they had on them, like a necklace or a ring or whatever.
Yeah.
So while this was taking place, the field office of the FBI that's in Denver was working with the Airlines and Civil Aeronautics Board investigating the crash. Visual investigation and collecting pieces of wreckage. They learned that the tail section had been severed from the plane, like it was cut with a knife, like it was sheared off. And it fell about 1.5 miles from the rest of the plane. The engine nose, that hit like in whole. The middle section was scattered over a whole area.
Oh,
so
God.
Clearly there was an explosion. So the engine.
I already have anxiety when I'm flying.
I know. Especially now that it's been so long since people have flown because of COVID, getting back on the plane. Yeah. It's like once you, if you've never flown and you get on a plane, it's scary the first time as a plane flies over your condo.
Yeah.
But then you get used to it.
I get used to it, but every now and then I don't handle turbulence super well. Like I will just bug out. Look around, like, is everyone okay? Like, is am I the weirdest person here?
I had a fling with a pilot once, and he said that turbulence is like driving, like you're driving on the road and like you hit a pothole or a bump in the road. That's basically what turbulence is. But it's not going to wreck you. You're not going to like fall out of the sky. You're fine. And once he told me that, totally fine with turbulence. I don't like it when like air pockets. Like, have you ever hit an air pocket where you just drop?
Oh my gosh. I didn't even know that was a possibility.
It is a possibility.
I hope no one's flying listening to this. Yes.
I was flying back from Charleston and hit an air pocket.
Oh God.
And we dropped like hundreds of feet like that.
Are you joking?
No.
It took hundreds of feet?
It took my stomach. I felt like I was going to throw. I did not. You know that feeling like your stomach gets took? Like when you go over a hill?
Roller coaster. Yeah.
I never got it back until we landed in Memphis. Like, it stayed gone until we landed. It was terrifying. And the pilot comes on and is like, whoops. Like, it was no big deal. I mean, it just happens.
Oh, I did not know about that.
Sorry, your neck's red now.
I already have anxiety. I'm medicated for that, and it helps. But I'll be on the plane, and we'll be flying, and I'll just be like, we are basically a speeding bullet in the sky. This makes no sense.
Lacey's the girl from Bridesmaids.
I get
that freaks out.
Well, now you can't drink on planes.
You can't?
No. Okay, so
I've not flown, but okay. I mean, I flew in a private plane since
yeah, okay,
COVID,
so,
but not like commercial.
Yeah, when we flew to Colorado. They basically come by. Sometimes some planes will just give you a packet of like a water bottle and goldfish or whatever in a bag, and they'll hand it to you. You won't even get soda or anything. Alcohol's off the menu. Totally, no alcohol. Period.
Where were we?
Sorry, we digress. Continue. I could talk about plane anxiety for a while because I've
this
got
is
it.
Not helping. I'm
but
real
it's not
sorry.
Helping. I won't re-listen to this on a plane.
Do not. So engineers for the airline, Douglas Aircraft, and other, you know, like private manufacturers, you know, were looking around and they're like, okay, there was no malfunction. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what happened. It was not a error on our part, you know, nothing. Oh, okay. There was no, you know, we didn't do this. It was clearly sabotage, like a bomb.
Oh.
So the FBI starts a criminal investigation. Eyewitnesses to the crash, employees handling the plane before the crash, the cargo, the mail, and baggage were all background. They did backgrounds on all of them. Mm-hmm. They were talking to everybody. They did investigations of all the passengers and crew members. So they were like, FBI was in.
So they're thinking maybe this was a
terrorist. Something
okay.
happened.
Yeah.
So who had, so... You know, like, who had a reason to do this? So the wreckage and the baggage and personal effects, they kept all that for, you know, like, evidence or see if there were any leads. 200 people who lived within 140 square miles around the crash site said the initial explosion just looked like it was a routine flight. I mean, it didn't look like nothing happened. Like, the plane wasn't swerving out of control and, like, something crazy. There was nothing shot into it. Like, it just was just flying. And it just exploded.
Oh, my gosh. At least it was probably fast.
I don't know.
It's all horrible.
It's all horrible. So, they said there was all of a sudden, they saw, like, a big bright light and, like, fiery streams falling from the plane. Then a second explosion happened when the plane hit the ground. Probably because the nose and the front hit, the fuel tanks. Lacey, I'm
getting
so sorry. She's our arm.
I can talk
her
about
armpits
murder,
are sweating.
But, like, start talking about plane crashes.
She keeps fidgeting with her hair. I should have warned you. So probably one or both of the fuel tanks exploded upon impact. So they calculated the plane was about 10,800 feet above sea level. So that's roughly 5,782 feet above ground. So they were still climbing when it happened.
So it wasn't long after.
11 minutes.
Oh my gosh, 11 minutes.
11 minutes. Which I guess cruising altitude is what? 2 to 3 minutes? The pilot told me, but I forget. Everyone kind of agreed. Explosion occurred near the rear cargo pit, meaning it was most likely luggage. They checked all the air freight shipments on the plane. There was nothing that could have exploded. No flammable liquids or shipments. Nothing. Nothing on the plane. They did find 4 pieces of sheet metal, but it did not belong to the plane. Because, you know, they're really, like, the NTSB is going in, and they're putting this plane back together. Even back in the 50s, trying to figure out what happened. This piece goes here. It's like a giant jigsaw puzzle. So they found this sheet metal. One side was red. The other side said HO. It was eventually identified as part of a 6-volt battery. Later to be determined that it was a detonator of a bomb. So there was a bomb on
board.
Yeah. Other pieces found in the plane wreckage had residue of an explosive that was traced back to being dynamite.
Okay. Now, I wonder what the, because obviously now we go through tons and tons of screening at TSA. I wonder what they did back then. Just like,
yeah,
hey, get on.
Was they probably just like weighed it and put it on. Even if, obviously, we are older, but even before 9/11, it was super laxed.
Yeah, that's to fly. True. That's absolutely true.
And like my mom would say, like, well, you could smoke on planes whenever I was flying. So I'm like, I can't even imagine being able to smoke a cigarette on an airplane. I'd be down because I'm a nervous flyer too. I'd be puffing it up like Cheech and Chong. I look like Slimer with all the cigarettes in my mouth because I am too a nervous flyer. But the people that don't smoke would be like
that's
choked
true.
Out.
I'd be having a fit.
Oh. Can't even imagine. No. So other pieces had the, you know, had the dynamite. So now they're looking at passengers.
Yeah.
Or anyone who might have had the motive to kill them. So descriptions of each person's luggage was looked into. And immediately Daisy King was closely examined.
A woman named Daisy.
Named Daisy King was examined by the experts. So Daisy was headed to Alaska to see her daughter. So she was flying from Colorado to Portland, and then from Portland to Seattle to Oregon. So I'm like, that's a lot of layovers, but
it was the 50s.
So personal letters, newspaper clippings about her family, checkbook, $1,000 of traveler's checks, an address book, 2 keys and a receipt for a safety deposit box were all found on her.
Hmm.
One of the clippings from the newspaper was about her son, Jack, who had recently been charged with forgery and was on the local most wanted list.
Ooh.
So, seeing as these were all close to her, they were most likely in her purse. So, only bits and pieces of her suitcase was found. They discovered that there were 3 life insurance policies out on her, and they all went to Jack.
Three.
So, fun fact.
She didn't have a husband at the time.
No. Fun fact about this is this blew my mind whenever I read this. There used to be vending machines in airports that you could purchase life insurance from before you boarded a plane. Yes.
Well, I would not fly in that if that was the bus.
If anybody's listening to this and knows that these used to exist, please send us a message.
Surely there's someone.
But yeah, they used to have vending machines in airports that you could purchase life insurance. So he bought them in the terminal.
That is...
So these apparently were taken out of airports.
They replace those with lotto tickets now.
Exactly. Yes.
I never even knew those and you were can get a thing massage. Until I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, you can get a massage. You don't need life insurance. You're getting a massage. You're getting a lottery ticket. You're getting a plane. So this was all changed in like 1980.
Good.
But yeah, you used to could. You used to be able to buy life insurance policies, which I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing.
I don't know. That just sounds...
Would you? Would you?
No. I don't know. If that was a thing now, no. I need to talk to a professional.
I feel like you would. I mean, I guess you just put your money in and punch some buttons and it ticket. I don't know. So upon her death, Jack would get a substantial inheritance. So $37,000.
Well, that's a lot for that time.
In 2019, right? It was $360,000, which sounds like a ton.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But I don't know if I would like off somebody for $300,000.
No. See, that's one of those things. I'm like, sure, in the moment, that's a lot of money, but that's your whole, no, absolutely not.
No. I mean, anyways. So they also learned that Jack and his mother fought a lot. So a little backstory on Jack and Diane. No, kidding. Jack and his mother.
Jack and Daisy.
Jack was born in 1932 to Daisy and her second husband. He was the second child for Daisy. She had a daughter from a previous marriage, but first husband died. Mom remarried, has Jack. Jack was born during the Depression, and his dad died of pneumonia, so it was just mom and two kids.
Mm-hmm.
At age 5, he was taken to an orphanage.
Why?
She couldn't afford to take care of.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like someone kicked me in my stomach when I read that. Max is 7.
I wonder how many people that happened to.
I couldn't imagine the pain and the confusion and the hurt you would feel that you just... Because she kept the daughter.
Oh.
And took him and dropped him off.
Oh my goodness. At an orphanage.
So, Daisy remarries husband number 3, Earl King, who died shortly after. And she used her inheritance from his death to become a very successful businesswoman.
So, did she get her son back?
No. Even though she was wealthy, she did not go back for Jack.
Nope, don't like that.
I don't either. And this is husband number 3? I don't know. Maybe somebody should have looked in on Daisy. Strictly speculating. Don't know. But she's out here living it up, and this baby is in the orphanage, abandoned. I know, it makes me super sad. So anyways, he was estranged from his mother until he was around 22.
Holy cow.
Yes, he was grown. She never went back for him. It makes me want to punch her in the face. God rest her soul.
Ugh.
But yeah. So she had a restaurant, like a drive-in, and Jack came there to work, but he had a very poor relationship with his mom.
Well, sure.
I'm sure there was a lot of underlying... Wait. Anger, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, he probably did want to read. That's his mom.
Yeah.
But Jack wasn't perfect either. He had several run-ins with the law. He'd stolen some blank checks. He got in trouble for forgery. He got in trouble for hauling whiskey. I guess, you know, like, in my mind, he's like smoking the bandit. He's running in alcohol. You couldn't do that back then. He did serve in the Coast Guard and was honorably discharged. So that's a plus. Mm-hmm. So in 1955, early 55, he moved to Denver to work for his mom. Mom lived in Florida.
Hmm.
She just lived in Florida, beaching it up, pina coladas, cabana boys, kids in the orphanage. She DGAF. Nothing. So Jack's there working her... drive-in or whatever, restaurant. His wife, he was married and had 2 small kids. So mom, his mother, moves back to kind of help him maybe take care of his kids since she missed out. So maybe she was trying to make amends. Who knows?
Sure.
Yeah, sure, Jim. So, wife would later say that he had a package wrapped in Christmas paper and he put it in mom's luggage the day before she left. So, when she moved in with Jack and his wife to help because they had two small kids. Like, one was like not even two and they had like a 9-month old. So, she kind of, like I said, maybe she was trying to make amends. So, but before all this happens, before she, you know, goes to the airport and all that, while Jack is still working at the restaurant, it blows up. The restaurant. Yeah. Suspiciously, they thought it was a gas leak. He'd taken out insurance on the restaurant and the restaurant blows up. Yeah. So investigators determined that explosives were used in the plane. Obviously, it was in luggage, interviews, blah, 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 physical evidence at Jack's house, and finally a confession from Jack.
Oh.
He was arrested and charged with sabotage.
Sabotage?
Yes. Later, it was changed to murder. The trial was the first in the state to be televised.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And up until this crime happened, there was no federal statute on the books that said blowing up a plane was a crime.
Wow.
This was the first one.
Wow.
So the day he confessed, the DA moved pretty quick to prosecute him.
Gotta figure this out, guys.
Because they didn't have anything.
That is.
So the day he confessed, wow, the DA was like, we gotta do something. We don't have anything saying it's a crime to blow up a damn plane. So the easiest way they could charge him was premeditated murder of a single victim.
Right.
His
mother. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So he was only charged with her murder, not the other victims.
Because I feel like today that would have been
domestic terrorism
or yes, something.
That's but in 1955.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not, sure. No. Yeah. So he was never charged. Then he recanted his confession.
Mm.
The defense was like, we can't counter. There's too much evidence against you. You've blown this up. You've been in trouble. You took out life insurance. You confessed. You knew all the details. We can't. Yeah. So, February of 1956, he was in jail. So, February of 56, so the next year, he attempted to kill himself in his cell. So, then he was put on 24-hour watch.
Sure.
And in May of 1956, he was convicted of murder and sentenced to death. Yeah. So, Jack Gilbert Graham was executed by gas on January 11th, 1957.
That's quick.
So quick.
I was thinking you were going to say 30 years later.
No. No. What? Not even a year. Because this,
why
well.
Why was it that quick?
I guess back then they killed you quick.
Oh my God. Ooh.
Now you get like so much, you know.
Oh yeah. Like it's like 30
so
years.
So many. Like
years.
Yeah. We're putting it off.
Appeals.
We're appealing it. We're doing all these things. You get so many chances. Not then.
Ooh.
You were convicted. They put a needle in your arm. They didn't give a shit about what you wanted to eat. No last meals. No interviews,
really?
Nothing. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Honestly, you confidently said.
Strictly speculating. I do not know. Yeah, but he agreed to talk and he took a polygraph. He consented to search of all of his stuff. And then it was after all these things happened is when he was like, just kidding. His sister said that he had a terrible temper, that he wasn't mentally sound, and he threatened her with a hammer one time. And she said one time they were all at his, you know, because she, I guess, had come down. I think it, strictly speculating again, it kind of sounds like from what I read that maybe when he kind of reappeared back in his mother's life and his sister's life, they kind of were like, this is the brother I never knew or this is the son I never knew. And so they tried to build and forge a relationship. So sister and mom went to stay with him and his wife and their new babies. To try to form a relationship, maybe. And she said that one time his wife got up and he woke up, she wasn't in bed, and so his sister and mother and wife were all playing cards at the table, at the kitchen table, and he backhanded her, like, in the face several times because she got up and left him, and he didn't, and made her go get back in bed.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, I'm not trying to play devil's advocate because he's a real asshole for blowing a plane up and killing innocent people, but being abandoned at 5, I'm sure you probably have some mental stuff you need to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm not... Anyways. So, he actually told the prison doctors that he bought the dynamite, timer, and such, and made the bomb, like an old-fashioned bomb. Like, literally, like...
How do you do that without Google?
How do you do that without Google, for real?
I'm not asking. No one write
no
that
one
in.
No one write that in. No. But in my mind, he watched a lot of Looney Tunes. Basically, how it happened is he dropped off his family at the door at the airport, parked the car, got the luggage, set the timer, put it back in her luggage, and then she boarded the plane. The timer was already set to go off.
Wow, that's horrible.
It's terrible. So the jurors were made up of 2 housewives, 1 beauty queen, 2 typists, a movie executive, an engineer, a truck driver, a telephone operator, a sales lady, a bookkeeper, and a lithograph? What is a lithograph?
Printing? Like a printer?
So it was just like your basic, normal, average, everyday people were the,
right.
were the jury. So that's my case of Jack Gilbert Graham.
Wow. I've never heard about this before.
Me either. Blew a whole damn plane up.
Ugh.
To get back at his mother. You think it was to get back at her? You think it was revenge or you think it was greed? I don't know. I kind of feel like it could have been a little bit of both.
I think maybe they were fueled by the money, but like didn't care. You know what I mean? Like he didn't have.
And he had said, and I read something and I didn't write it down, so I'm going to totally butcher this. But he had said something along the lines when they asked him, like, you didn't care about killing innocent people. And he was like, well, I mean, if it's their time to go, they're not going to die.
Huh? What kind of warped, oof. Yeah, that's a thing, too. It's like, he didn't care to blow up a whole plane of people.
Mm-mm. So, why would you not just, like, let your mom be carrying the suitcase and it blow up while she was walking in and just kill her?
Gosh,
I'm not trying to put ideas out there for anybody.
No, I know, but it's
other
like, there's
ways
you don't
to
have to
do
murder
it. Everybody. Mm. No.
Wow.
Lacey's like, damn it, Ashley. Not fly anymore. You're like, I don't want, she's never going to fly with me because she's probably like, Ashley, you have a lot of enemies. I've heard your voicemails. You have a lot
I've
of
heard
enemies.
Your voicemails.
Never flying with you.
No.
What do you have a bomb in your suitcase?
Luckily, my next trip I'm driving, but that's scary too. But anyway, let me.
But yeah, but I mean, like he. Like he literally blew the whole plane up.
I'm very happy that TSA is
super safe and secure now.
I always moan and groan like, they're doing this and that, but I'm happy for it. At the end of the day, they can feel up my messy bun. Because, no lie, my messy bun always gets checked in my yoga pants. They always have to do their body search.
My grandmother was always like, flying is a big deal. You should dress up to fly. And so I do.
That's back when they gave you meals, okay? They don't give you anything.
She's like,
anymore.
They don't give you
shit. They don't even let you buy alcohol anymore.
If you can't get a tiny bottle of vodka, I'm wearing yoga pants. Messy bun, camel toe on the plane. Don't care.
You won't see a shred of makeup on my face in the airport.
She doesn't care.
I do not care. No.
Have you ever had like a crazy close call on a plane? Have you ever got on a plane and been like, that person looks suspicious?
No. I'm more concerned, I guess, with just the turbulence and the I think about it in my head, like, oh, we're high up. I'm afraid of heights, so I feel like it's more about that kind of thing, not like people blowing it up or anything like that.
I'm like a six-year-old on a plane. Like, my face is to the glass. I'm looking
I love looking out.
Like, I love it.
It's a love. Like, I love flying. I think it's really pretty and stuff, but I'll just have flashes of, oh, my gosh, we're a speeding bullet going through the air.
Oh, my God, I've never thought that.
But I don't – I'm fine. I fly quite, I guess, fairly frequently.
I'm going to give a shout-out to my friend Heather, because the last time her and I flew together, we flew back from D.C., and so we're waiting. We have, like, a little bit of a wait for what – I don't even know what was going on, but – maybe our plane hadn't got there yet. So anyways, we're sitting there and we're, you know, we've made our rounds. We've ate. We're at the bar. We're at the gate and we're just waiting to board. And she's like, keeps trying to call like her mom. Her mom had her daughter and Kat's the same age as Max. So they're both 7. Well, Kat's 6. Anyways. So I was like, is something wrong? Like, why are you trying to call? She's like, I always just call like, my kid before I get on a plane in case something happens. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, that never, ever crosses my mind. Like, I'll call Max.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, I'm about to board, you know, or whatever. I'll call you when I land or I'll see you at the airport. Yeah. You're picking me up or whatever. I love you. Whatever. But it's never because I think, and she's like, you never know. I mean, that could be the last time I ever speak to her. And I'm like,
gosh, I'm not flying with her. Christ, I don't need someone that I can feed off.
I'm like, I cannot. No, you and Heather would be the two girls from.
No, I need a.
She would be the one, there's something on the wing. And you would be the drunk one that's trying to run with the.
I need someone strong for me.
No, I'm like, Heather, that never, ever crosses my mind that may be the last time I speak to my kid. But now I want to throw up and I need an Ativan. Like, no.
Oof.
So, yeah. Sorry, Heather. You freaked me out. I've never forgot that. Now I think about it every time I've flown since.
I always think about, just quick sidebar, the episode of Twilight Zone, the one William Shatner's in and that creepy thing's on the wing of the plane.
That's what I'm saying.
Because we're always on the wing for whatever reason. Mm-mm. And I always look at it and I'm like, I'm going to see some. That would be fun.
What
as long
be
as
fun?
I live. I've seen some weird monsters.
No! That's a that would not be. There is no even alternate universe where that would be fun. No. Period.
That'd be a good time. But crashing, no.
Do you have like a. Like a thing, like, do you have like a routine that you do before you fly?
No.
You don't have like a, I'm very superstitious.
I'm a little stitious, but I'm not superstitious.
Dad joke. I'm all caps superstitious. Mm. I have a rosary that was for my first communion that I carry with me on every flight. And I also listen to the same song.
Seriously?
I listen to the same song from the time I board.
Are you kidding me?
To us taxiing, to us taking off, to us getting cruising altitude.
Oh my goodness.
To the undo your seatbelt sign comes on.
I don't do any of that.
I do.
I'm just tired. I'm annoyed.
I'm not. I have a whole thing. I get on. I do a routine. I do. I never deter from that. No matter what, I do the same thing every time. Maybe I'll have OCD. No, I have the rosary for my first communion.
Are you like gripping it in your hand?
I do. So it's in this little like blue velvet like little sack that it came in.
Oh.
And so I hold it in my hand.
Oh my gosh.
And I put on Bob Seger's Night Moves and I listen to it on repeat. Roughly 6 times, depending on how long we're taxiing. The taxiing's the worst. And then it's on repeat the whole time until we get to cruising altitude. It's so weird to other people. Makes sense to me. Makes me feel better.
That doesn't sound weird to anyone that's listening that's an Eagles fan, because they're really superstitious too.
Really?
Yeah.
So there you go. It's the same song.
Except they're doing that before football.
This is true. On that note, let's talk about your case.
All right. So before I went on my Colorado trip a few weeks ago, I did a quick Google search to find out supposed haunted places in Colorado. I just always do that when I travel. So while doing this, I actually discovered a case I'd never heard of before.
We love a case we've never heard of
so,
before.
Yeah, this is a spooky one, at least for me, and it's about the Denver Spider-Man.
Never heard of it.
Okay, the name will make more sense later. We'll get to that. So first, let me tell you about Philip Peters, who was born in 1869. My case is a little older, too.
You love an old case.
I do love old cases. I haven't done one in a while, so I was excited about this one. So Philip lived in Denver, Colorado. He was retired, but previously worked at Denver and Rio Grande Railway as an auditor. He was married to Helen and had one son named Philip Peters Jr. So Philip and Helen loved music, and Philip could play the mandolin and was also a member of the local Denver Musicians Club. He and Helen would often give guitar and mandolin lessons in the club. Very cool. So now let's fast forward to September of 1941. So this is a 40s case. So this is when Helen, who would have been in her late 60s at this time, broke her hip from a bad fall and had to spend time recovering in the hospital. So Philip was a few years older than her and was 71 at the time.
Dang.
And by this point, his son had grown up and moved out, so he was home alone while she was in the hospital recovering. But his neighbors were friendly and did keep an eye on him. They'd also help him out around the house and would even invite him over to their homes for meals when Helen was away in the hospital. He would still visit Helen each day in the hospital to check up on her. He was really sweet. They'd been married for like 40 years.
Aww.
At this point, yeah. So a few weeks after Helen's fall, on Friday, October 17th, the neighbors across the street were expecting him to arrive for dinner. He was late, which was really unusual for him, so Mrs. Ross walked across the street to see what the holdup was. No lights were on in the house or anything, which was really weird because she knew he would be home at this time. He wouldn't be anywhere else. So she knocked on the door, and he did not answer. Mrs. Ross asked another neighbor named Doris Burke to help see if they could get in through the back of the house. She needed help getting over the fence, so Doris lent a hand. I don't know if she boosted her up over there or what, but yeah. So imagine two housewives in the 40s sneaking in over a fence. So the door was locked, and I couldn't figure out how she got in exactly. I just kind of assumed maybe since they're all close neighbors, maybe one had a spare key or knew where one was hidden or something. But anyway, she ended up entering through the house through the back door, and then she flipped on the kitchen light. She immediately gave a horrified scream as she saw blood spatter up the walls and throughout the house. So she followed the streaks left by blood, and it led her to the body of Philip Peters lying face down in the downstairs bedroom. He appeared to have been beaten to death, and in fact, he was struck 37 times with a blunt object. 71 years old, yeah.
37 times?
Yeah, 37 times.
I feel like...
That's a lot.
I feel like when you hit somebody that many times, you're going to be... That's going to take a lot out of you.
I would think so, yeah. That's a lot. And there were a lot of injuries on his arms and forearms especially, so it indicated he had fought back.
Yeah.
And his cane was broken in half, so he put up a fight. So, of course, they call the police, and they arrive quickly onto the scene. Captain James Childers, or Childers, looked around the property to try to see if he could find anything. Based on the state of the body, they believe the murder had only taken place a couple of hours before. So the strange thing was that all the doors were locked. And none of them looked like they had been tampered with either. So the windows were all closed and locked, and they had no idea where the point of entry was. So they extensively searched the home and didn't have any luck either. They did notice that there was a small false panel in the closet in the back wall of an upstairs storage room. They banged on it a couple of times, but found that it was tightly locked. But it was only 8 inches by 15 inches, so they were like, eh, whatever. Well, in the kitchen, investigators found some fragments of a revolver butt on the ground and also a cast iron stove shaker
that looked
to be moved. It's moved the wood around in the stove. So cast iron,
okay,
it was long, it was heavy. So pretty much since this was moved, they were thinking maybe this was the murder weapon. So there were some creepy stories that started floating around the neighborhood, and this became known in the local paper as the Denver Ghost House Slayings. Detectives were trying to figure out who had wanted to murder Philip because it didn't look like an attempted robbery or anything. There was cash in various places. In fact, a total of $400, and this was in, you know, the early 40s. So Philip was well-liked in the neighborhood and community. He was retired, so it's not like he had any co-workers that were out to get him, and no one could think of any enemies he had, or even that Helen had. So police ended up bringing in a couple of people of interest, but nothing came of it, and they had no ties to Philip anyway. It was pretty much like, oh, that homeless guy looks suspicious. Let's bring him in and ask him where he was. So it was nothing major at all. So they finally got lab results back, which I didn't even realize they had.
They had labs back then?
I don't know what kind of labs. So they got the lab results back from the stove shaker, and it was wiped clean of fingerprints, but they found a couple of small specks of blood on it. So this pretty much confirmed their theory, like, yeah, this was definitely the murder weapon. So 4 months later, in February of 1942, Helen was released from the hospital. So that must have been really bad. 4 months later.
4 months?
Yeah, 4 months later. And of course, she couldn't be at her house alone, so she hired two nurses to help her out. Edith Clark worked during the day, and Hattie Johnson worked at night. So soon after she moved back, the investigation took a very strange turn. All three women started noticing strange things happening around the house. Food went missing, there were peculiar sounds, things were moved out of place. Edith reported she heard noises in the walls and sometimes would hear soft footsteps in empty rooms.
Mm-mm. No, burn the whole house.
So Helen had a doorbell installed in her upstairs room on a wall near her bed. And she also had a bell downstairs, basically so she could alert the nurses in case she needed anything or had an emergency. Well, one day, a neighbor across the street heard the bell ringing from Helen's room, her upstairs room, and it was ringing quite a lot, so he walked over quickly to see what was going on, thinking maybe something's wrong. Well, guess what? Helen was sitting downstairs in a chair. It would have been impossible for her to ring the bell and then get downstairs that quickly. She could barely even walk. She was mostly bedridden at this point. So that was very strange. And stuff like this just kept happening until one day the scariest thing of all happened. Edith saw a dark figure in the stairway.
Mm-mm.
She immediately called police, and this is what she said. Just a few minutes ago, I heard a sort of tapping. I had heard it before, but I thought it was only woodpeckers. But at this time, I walked into the kitchen, and I saw the door to the stairway that leads upstairs slowly open. A foot came out, and then I saw a thin white hand on the door.
Mm-mm. No.
I screamed, and the man ducked back into the stairway, and I heard him running up the steps. Isn't that so freaky?
No.
So immediately, the police go to the house. They do a full search. Search every room in the house, find nothing. Two officers even stayed in this house for 48 hours solid. And there was no sighting of any intruder.
Mm-mm.
Isn't that so creepy?
No.
Edith was over this. I don't blame her, so she quit. 2 weeks later, Hattie quit as well because she strongly thought the house was haunted. Neither of them were like, nope, I'm out. This is not living here anymore.
No, we're not. Mm-mm.
So at this point, Helen didn't really have much of a choice because she had needed assistance. So she moved in with her son and his wife who lived in Grand Junction, Colorado on the west side of the state. So at this point, no one's living in the house. It's vacant, it's empty, but now neighbors are starting to notice strange things. So they all know that Helen's left, and both nurses did, but the blinds are being opened and closed at various times of day. So one neighbor called the cops and reported that a silhouette of a figure appeared to be walking around the house, and then more neighbors started calling in to report similar sightings. Yet again, police go search the house and find absolutely nothing and no person at all. So even at this point, they're like, okay, we're getting so many calls about this house. Let's do a stakeout. Mm-hmm. So they do a stakeout in front of the house for 5 days. Like, they're there night and day for 5 days. And nothing happens. Nothing unusual whatsoever. But even after this started going on, they would still stop by the home every single day just to check around to see if anything was happening. Just routinely, you know? So the home on 3335 West Montcrief Place started being called the Ghost House of Denver. I wanted to go check this house out.
And you
but
didn't?
I didn't? No. No, I didn't. So months went by, but on Thursday, July 30th, detectives in the neighborhood caught a lucky break. Two officers stopped by the house to do a routine check, but this time they heard something upstairs. They heard the ghost. Isn't this creepy? So they ran upstairs into one of the bedrooms where they heard the noise. They opened the closet door.
It was a mouse.
No. They saw a pair of legs disappearing upward through a tiny panel in the attic.
You are shitting me. It was real?
Yes! The tiny panel that they originally saw that was 8 inches by 15 inches. I mean, that's like not even much bigger than a piece of paper.
Because men lie. So
think of a standard size of paper, but then add a couple more inches to this.
So that?
Yeah.
No.
That. So they disregarded that. So they yanked his legs and pulled him down to the ground. They caught the ghost. So Officer Childers said this about the man. He is the strangest looking human I had ever seen.
Well, he's a ghost, so.
He's a ghost.
He's not a human.
He was a tall man, almost 6 feet tall, but thin as a wilted weed. His dirty hair hung low over his ears, and his skin was the ugly, unwashed gray of an overcast sky. Okay, Agatha Christie. Oh, man. So this man had been living in this home since September of 1941 and had been there for nearly a year at this point. Mm-mm. He was holding a .44 caliber revolver in his hand, but didn't try to fire at the police. His clothes were rotted, which I didn't even realize that that's something that could happen to clothing. They're rotted.
Gross.
And they were held together by ropes. To get him to talk only took a hamburger.
Same. Attacked.
I feel attacked. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I would not be the person that you could torture. Because the second you try to do something mean, if you even like bent my finger up, I'd be like, okay,
I would rat on anyone if I was going to get tortured.
I would sell you up the river. Yeah, no. Or also for a hamburger. Where's the hamburger from?
They didn't say. So to get him to talk, it only took a hamburger, but also apple pie and a coffee.
It's McDonald's. Yeah. It's McDonald's.
They didn't say.
It's a apple pie and a hamburger from McDonald's.
Yeah. They didn't say hand pie.
That's not a hand pie from McDonald's. You never had their,
Did they have pie?
They have like the apple pie.
I just thought they had hand pies.
What the fuck is a hand pie?
Like, you know.
Like a fried pie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never heard it called a hand pie.
Okay.
Entire life.
Really?
Okay. Never
that's why
a hand
I call
pie.
Them the hand pies.
Who says that?
Me.
Are you the only person?
I've
never heard a hand pie. I feel like our friends would call that something else. But anyways, continue.
It could be.
Ghost, hand pie burger.
Okay.
Ropes, rotted clothes.
This story.
Coffee.
So the man started spilling the details.
He's like, I'm done.
His name was Theodore Edward Conies.
Mm-hmm.
So Theodore was born in Petersburg, Illinois on November 2nd of 1882, but arrived in Denver in the 1910s. He was a sickly child, and he said his poor health followed him into adulthood. They didn't get specific. He mentioned it was something to do with his heart. He struggled to keep a job and would often have to sleep on the streets of Denver. He grew up with an overbearing mother. Shocker.
Shocker.
Right. But he did learn how to play the mandolin. This is what led him to meet Philip and Helen Peters. So they became acquainted at the Denver Guitar Club. And one evening, Theodore went to Philip and Helen's house, hoping to be able to ask them for some money and maybe something to eat. Unfortunately, this was at the time when Helen was at the hospital and Philip was keeping her company. So since no one was home, Theodore decided to break in the house and steal some food. A few days later, he did try to do it again, but this time he was discovered by Peter. Theodore insisted that the murder was a split-second decision and he hadn't planned on killing him. However, after he killed Peter, he decided to stay in the small attic. So, to look around the attic, Denver PD sent their smallest officer to check it out. They referred to it as a nest. This is hard to get through. Okay, so, yeah. He didn't bathe once during this time there.
Ew, sounds like my kid.
So, you can imagine the smell. He also had areas where he was collecting his waste. And the officer puked.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I would too.
Just a bowl of doo-doo.
I don't even know if it was a bowl. So, the hidden crawl space was the size of a coffin.
Mm-mm.
It was 37 inches tall at the tallest point because it had a peak. So, it was 7 feet long and 4 feet wide. Tiny. Officer Fred Zarno said this. A man would have to be a spider to stand it long up there. So that's why the newspapers ran with the headline and dubbed Theodore Conies as the Denver Spider-Man. At the time of his arrest, Theodore was 75 pounds and almost 6 feet tall.
Oh my gosh.
That is unfathomable almost. So this is what Theodore said at this time. Every night I would listen at the hole until I heard him snoring, and then I would crawl out and go through the icebox, and I would take just enough so it wouldn't be too noticeable. I would carry it back to my nest and eat it there.
I'm done with you.
I would carry it back to my nest and eat it there. I found parts of an old crystal set in one of the closets and a pair of earphones. I fixed it up so it would work, and I listened to all the newscasts, music, and everything. I used to beat it down to the bathroom and even shaved with the old man's razor. Well, Theodore eventually thought this was boring and decided to start following Philip around the house. He would hide behind doors as Philip passed just for entertainment. He said it was sort of a game and would give him a thrill. This terrifies me. Well, one night he was heading downstairs to get some food, and he thought Philip and Helen were fast asleep, and this was not the case. Philip went downstairs and came face to face with Theodore. Theodore said he thought he was going to lose his shelter, so he saw an old revolver that was hanging on the wall and hit Philip in the head. This didn't keep him down, and Philip got up and said he was going to go call the cops. So this is when Theodore followed him through the house and murdered him. He kept hitting him and hitting him. After his arrest, Theodore said this. It's been a nightmare, nearly 10 months of hellish, terrible nightmare, and now that it's all coming into the open, I feel relief. You can't live like a creature damned without thinking thoughts that burn deep in your soul. You see, I had never committed a crime before, not even a petty one. Yes, justice will come to me as it should. So here I am, I don't know whether I am crazy or not. I don't feel insane, but if being a damned fool is any sign of insanity, I'm certainly not in my right mind. So Theodore was charged and convicted of murder by a jury and sentenced to life in prison in October of 1942. He was sent to the state penitentiary in Cannon City and remained there until his death in May 16th, 1967, at the old age of 84. So, Theodore said, now I feel safe. I'll have a better home than I've had in years, which is a really bleak way to look at prison. He was buried in an unmarked grave in Mountain Vale Memorial Park of Cannon City, Colorado. So this story gave me the heebie-jeebies because home intrusion is one of my, something that just really freaks me out. I'm also claustrophobic. Can't imagine living in a space of a coffin.
No.
For almost a year, much less 5 minutes. So
with a bowl of doo-doo.
Ugh.
Yeah. No.
That line, and he kept calling it a nest. Oh, my gosh.
No, it's a nest of shit.
No.
Literally.
I will link up photos of.
You have a, mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Not of that. Not okay. of that. I'm sorry. Like, no, I won't be linking those. But of him, and he's a very tall, skinny man. But also there's an illustration that shows a graphic of like what he would have looked like up in this. It's almost like a, I don't know, styling of a political cartoon, but it's not a political cartoon. But you know what I mean. I'll post that up. So have you ever heard of the term frogging?
Bitch.
So not, so it sounds like frogging, but it starts with PH. Frogging.
I feel like if we look this up on
the
interweb, it would mean something totally
different. No, it doesn't. Even Urban Dictionary's got the right definition.
Okay, what?
It's basically a person that secretly lives in another person's home.
And it's called frogging?
P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G. Mm-hmm.
No.
Frogging, no, for real. So the name comes from frogs.
Obvi.
Like, you know, they hop around from house to house undetected. So squatting means you're living in a house that's vacant, pretty much.
Right.
It's illegal still, but no one's there. So frogging is you're living there, you're hiding out. People also live there, but don't know you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So very strange. So this man may have been the first frog. P-H? P-H. No, for real. I'm not joking. So there are actually a lot of online accounts about this. And if you start Googling this late at night, I am telling you it's freaky. Okay? Frogging. Even Urban Dictionary. You can look up frogging in it. Yeah. So if you want to creep yourself out, Google this late at night. I'm serious. Everyone, check your attics. Don't do it by yourself.
No, I'm done.
Mm-mm. Even the small attics, check those. Okay. So a few months ago, I watched a really good psychological thriller on Amazon Prime.
Done.
You know, I love those. Those are my favorite. So it's called I See You, and Helen Hunt's in it.
Really? Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, I do too. It was released in 2019, and it's really underrated.
I love her.
It's kind of like this story, but not really. I don't want to say much because I don't want to give anything away. So everyone, go watch it if you like that sort of movie. Psychological thriller, twist, 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 turns, twist and turns.
What's the name of it?
I See You.
I See You.
And okay. I'll post it somewhere. I See You. Yeah, Amazon Prime. But yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's not like movie of the year, but you know, it's a good Friday night. You want to see something kind of freaky. But I got a lot of my info from the Dark Histories podcast, which kind of makes sense because this is dark history. There's some really cool cases on there too I'm going to have to listen to. So the Online Denver Library and USA Today. So these cases were really wacky.
This was a crazy Colorado.
Yeah. Who now knew? I know why it's called the Colorful Colorado.
Who knew about you,
I still
jokers.
Don't know why it's the Centennial State, but that's another story.
I'm speechless.
Mm-hmm. Spider-Man and
Plane crash. Twists and turns.
Both old stories. Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. As soon as I saw this one, because I'm like, oh, this is freaky. I'm like, yep, got my case. So following up from the Florida one, what's this, like Colorado? Love your mountains, hate your murders.
Love your mountains. Hate your murders.
Hate your froggers.
Hate your froggers.
Murders, plane crashes.
We hate it all. We just love the mountains and the hiking and your music venues.
Absolutely. Yeah. We haven't picked our next state yet because I think we're just going to put a poll up on Instagram or something.
Yeah, that's what we
should
do.
See what you want to do. So by the time we air this, we'll know.
We will know.
Stay tuned. But still, tell us what you want to hear. Yeah. We're always interested in that.
Yeah.
Follow us on Instagram at United States of Murder. That's, I feel like, where we're the most active, but also on Facebook and Twitter at US of M Podcast. And we have a Patreon. You can check us out at patreon.com/United States of Murder. See what fun stuff we offer there. We love your support. If you like what you hear and if you've heard of frogging before, leave us a review. If you know what frogging is.
You know what frogging is. Jeez.
If you know what frogging is, leave us a review. But anyway, yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back.
Bye.
Bye.